Hello, everyone, and welcome to another expert interview series at the Innovation and Creativity Summit 2017. Very happy to have James Taylor on the line today. James is a creativity speaker and creativity coach. We've worked together previously, and I know he's got a lot of great stuff to say about how creativity actually works and how we can improve it. James, it's wonderful to have you here.
Well, it's fantastic being and I've seen the guests you have on this summit, and some cool guests. I mean, I've seen Eric Ryle, you've got on David Burkus. It's great that you've brought all these folks together to kind of share their knowledge.
So for people who don't know you, can you give us a brief background as to how you got into creativity and the sort of work that you do?
Yeah, so I came originally, I was a musician many, many years ago. When I left school, I was a professional musician, toured around the world. And so I was very used to being on stage. And then I got really passionate about helping really other musicians, other artists, creatives, monetize and market what they were doing. So I kind of went from being on stage all the time to being backstage. So for the past really 15 years, I've been often the guy behind the scenes of things you maybe have been seeing. So managing bands like Deacon Blue, working with members of the Rolling Stones, multiple kind of Grammy award winners. And my job was really to help them really can get the most from their creative potential, to unlock that creative potential, and also to kind of put in place systems and processes and people and teams around them so they could really operate at the highest level. That might include big global tours together if it was a music artist, or working with authors on how to build their brand, especially online. A lot of the work I've been doing in the past, I moved to California a few years ago, and a lot of the work I did there was really working with subject matter experts to how to take that what was incredible knowledge as creatives in their brains and kind of create an online program, online membership site. So that's really what I was doing for many, many years. And it's only been relatively recently I've come back to go back on the stage again. And people just say, can you come and speak at our event? Can you come and work with our team? So that's what I've been doing more now, travel around the world, speaking about creativity and having online programs through my online school, which is called C School.
And I know that you've also put a lot of stuff on YouTube, which is where a lot of people know you from. One of your most popular videos is one of the ones which I'm amazed we haven't touched on much in the summit so far, which is what sort of creativity actually is and how it works. And it's about the creative process. Could you let us know a bit about what that is?
Yeah, so I mean, the reason I actually started doing the YouTube videos was just because I was learning, like many, many people are watching or listening now, you kind of learn a new subject. And I, even though I've been very heavily involved in working with a lot of creatives, like I said, myself creative as well, as I started really reading about the science and neuroscience and the research about it, I was kind of coming up with, this is fantastic. Why do more people not know about this? And so I just decided to do these videos really just as a way to help me learn. So I would film these short videos about whatever I was learning about creativity and put them up. And somehow they got very popular, and some of them had a lot of views. So the one about the creative process was, I was kind of amazed that no one had really created a video about it or maybe talked about it in this way, which is the five steps or stages of the creative process, which anyone that does any kind of creativity work, you'll either know it explicitly or you just kind of internally, it's kind of what you do. So the classic five stages, a stage, maybe the first stage is the preparation stage. So the other day I was talking to a group of lawyers and judges, and their classic in their preparation stage is like learning their brief, learning the case itself. If you're a musician or if you're an artist, it's looking maybe at the work of other musicians and artists. Then that's really where a lot of the work goes in, that preparation, really learning and kind of getting really knowledgeable about your particular domain or your subject. Then you go to this next stage, which is kind of the incubation stage. It's the stage where you have to, once you've taken all this knowledge in and all this information in, it's important, and I'm sure your other guests that come from the neuroscience perspective can talk about this as well, but you kind of have to put things to the back of your mind. And Stephen King, the writer, he talks about this when he's writing, working on a book. You often, when after he's kind of maybe done the first draft, he'll put it into the drawer for a little while. And then I'll pull it, bring it back out. Because what happens is you've taken so much information, you need to let that stuff just kind of go subconscious and sizzle there at the back. And there's a lot of your brain essentially looking for patterns and new things. And then we have the third stage, this kind of insight, or, you know, the aha moment, as we hear people talk about. Now, that's the bit that gets made into the movies. You know, that's the scene in the movie where I've got it, or, you know, the apple drops from the tree and things. In creativity, really, it's probably one of the shortest parts, you know, the shortest stages, but it is such a seminal moment that people kind of talk about, and they make movies and write books about it. And then you go to the fourth stage, which is this evaluation, where you have to evaluate all the different ideas that are coming to you to basically decide which of these ideas is one worth pursuing. So you either do that individually, or there's different, we teach at C-School, different ways you can do that individually or as part of a team. And then the final stage is the elaboration, the thing that Edison said, you know, 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. This is the 99% perspiration. So those are the five kind of classic stages of the creative process. But in reality, they're not linear. You're going back and forth between these different stages. But that's a good kind of model to kind of understand, to think about your creativity. So sometimes if things aren't necessarily working, you can think about how it relates to that creative process. And you can think, okay, maybe I need to focus on maybe developing some skills around there, or mastering, or changing things up, often changing the environment in which you're doing those things.
I think a lot of people, it does sort of spark something in themselves when they learn that this is something that more or less everyone goes through when they have an idea, because it seems to be pretty universal. And a lot of the research is suggesting there's either these five stages, or some people say four stages, they leave off at the elaboration at the end.
Yeah.
But it does seem to be something that happens in everyone. And it's also a good example of how everyone has the ability to be creative, even though, unfortunately, a lot of people nowadays don't consider themselves to be that creative. What's your view on people who say that about themselves?
Yeah, so when I go, in fact, yesterday, I was speaking to a group of business leaders in Edinburgh in Scotland. And I often start by asking the question, you know, please put your hands up if you consider yourself as creative. And a certain number of people put their hands up. And then maybe a second question is, how many of you consider creativity important for the job that you do, or the business that you work in? You know, pretty much everyone, you know, kind of puts their hands up. And then you ask the third question is, how many of you are organizations or leader organizations which are actively investing in creativity training or innovation training? And like very few hands go up at that point. So there's this gap there. And I think, you know, Adobe did the research saying that I think about 35% of people consider themselves creative. So that's shocking to me that such a small number of people consider themselves creative. And I think part of that is due to our education system, and like Ken Robinson talks about this at length in his TED Talks. But there's also, it can often be a cultural thing going on there as well. So I speak a lot in the Far East, and in Europe, we're used to, in Latin, you know, create ex nihilo, the idea that something has to be new, it has to be created from nothing. And that's because we come from a Judeo-Christian background where something, the world was created in 7 days. In that tradition. And so we have to think that something to be created, it has to be brand new. It never has to be existed before. But in the East, because they come from often a Buddhist or Confucius background, they believe in create ex materia, that something is a new thing is often a combination of two or more existing ideas. Like the iPhone is a phone and it's a computer. So I think one of the reasons a lot of people get really hung up about this idea of creativity and why they don't consider themselves creative is because they have a misunderstanding about what creativity actually is. And they think for something to be creative, it has to be brand new, that never existed before. And that's kind of not really what it is for most of the time.
What about people who feel like that they want to be creative, or they want to express themselves, but there's just things that are in their way? Either they feel like their boss won't let them, or they're afraid of expressing themselves, or they just don't have the confidence to do it.
Yeah, so I think one of the reasons that came about is, I mean, if you go right back to, you know, the ancient Greeks and the Romans, they felt that we were vessels for creativity. They talked about the genius loci, the genius of a place. You know, we were vessels for these ideas coming in from the gods or energy around us. And today we talk about, you know, energy more than anything else. And then in, around the Renaissance time, Giorgio Vasari wrote a book called Lives of the Artists. And that changed it. And that then talked about that it was the individual that was the genius. It was the creative genius. And that put a lot of pressure on people, because it then suddenly had to make it about, you know, Genius was all had to come from them. It couldn't be so much of a collaborative experience, because what Vasari had to do is he had to carefully paint out all the apprentices, all the patrons, all the other people that make something happen, apart from just the individual that gets the credit for it. So one of the first things I often do when I have conversations with people that maybe don't necessarily consider themselves creative, and I said, well, tell me your fears about creativity. And they'll say things like, I believe my idea isn't good enough. I believe that someone's already done my idea, but better. I believe I'm too young, or I believe that I'm too old, or I'll only do it when it's absolutely 100% perfect. What the writer Elizabeth Gilbert says in a book, Big Magic, she said, perfectionism is like a high class type of fear. It's fear in Jimmy Choo's shoes. It's like, it's trying to look all, you know, glamorous, but actually it's terrified. And the thing is, as I tell them, many of the most creative people I work with, Grammy Award winners, you know, best-selling authors, they have exactly the same fears. These are not different, but I think it's, in our media, we so put this idea of this lone creative genius as the way that creativity works, that you have to be some otherworldly drug-taking, risk-taking. And that's not really what creativity is the majority of the time. I think, and I think what we need to develop is a bit more honesty about the difficulties of the creative process as well. So the first thing I just say, get started. It's a classic book by Julia Cameron, called The Artist's Way. And there's a very simple exercise in that. If you just want to get started in this thinking, kind of reconnecting with your creativity, it's a good way to do it. Is every morning when you get up, sit down, have a notebook, and just write 3 pages of longhand, of just top of mind, just kind of get it out of your head what's going on there. Take about 15 minutes. The point is that creativity is much like a muscle. It needs to be just kind of worked out, and you know, just when you warm up in the morning, if you do yoga or anything in the morning, you kind of need to do that. And morning pages is a very effective way of doing that, to just kind of like stretch. No one else is ever going to see these pages that you've written. They're just for you, but they just allow you to start connecting with that creative thing inside of you. And then from there, it's a bit of a gateway, and it's like small incremental steps. And then you maybe give yourself a particular creative project that you want to work on. We organize a lot of creativity retreats at C-School. And I was doing, we had two at the weekend, one in California, one in London. And the thing that always interests me is when I go and run these events, I speak at these events, that a lot of people are there who have maybe hit a big birthday, a birthday with a zero on the end, or maybe had a major life event, maybe a death or an illness or divorce or something. And they kind of say to themselves, I want to get back that creative part of me. That's what I want to get. As my friend Hugh McLeod says, he said, you know, I want my crayons back. You know, they want to get back to that thing. And I think that's a very powerful indicator, and you should listen to that in yourself and just see where it goes. And there's different process, and there's, you know, things that you train about as well that just allow you to start kind of reconnecting with something that was already there all along. It's just been suppressed for a long time.
So what sort of other tips, apart from the morning pages, can you give people who want to sort of reconnect with their creativity? What sort of rituals or habits can people develop?
Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of them. So one of the things I find very powerful in creativity is the importance of place in your creative process. So the ancient Greeks knew about this. They called it the genius loci, the fact that places have their own genius and their own creativity. So when you're in those 5 different stages of the creative process, what you'll often find is that different places will work better at different stages. So in that preparation stage, that very first stage, it's often best to be doing them in quieter environments or places where you can really focus on absorbing as much information as possible. A little bit of noise is good. Just a little bit of, you know, background. That's why coffee shops can also be very useful for that. In fact, there's an app one of my guests on my podcast told me about recently called Coffeetivity, which I'd never heard about before. You know about it. And it's basically an app you have on your computer, and it plays the background noises of a coffee shop while you're working as well. So in that preparation stage, it's about kind of being in an environment which is relatively quiet or low level noise, so you can just focus on what you're doing. But when you go into those other stages, obviously the incubation stage and the insight stage, the incubation stage, or the definitely the insight stage, will most often happen when you're doing some kind of low-level physical activity, or when your mind is open and slightly unstructured in a different way. So it's why one of the reasons we get some of our best ideas in the shower, because you've woken up in the morning, your brain's not quite there yet. You may be thinking about things over the night from the night before, and you're open to unconventional ideas, and you're doing some kind of low-level physical things. So there's lots of studies being shown as well that just getting out in nature is very powerful. University of Berlin did a study showing in terms of what colors increase levels of creativity, and the color green, often that vibrant green that you'll get out in nature, is very, very good for creativity, which is why a lot of people also get some of their best ideas when they're out walking about as well. And then just little simple things like little creativity hacks like caffeine. Martha Farrar, who's the neuroscience professor at University of Pennsylvania, did a study on the effects of different substances on creativity. And one of the ones you was talking about coffee. Coffee is very useful at the first stage, at the preparation stage, and it's very good at the last stage when you're having to elaborate, you're having to really just kind of work on things, a lot of micro-testing. But in the middle stages where you're wanting to get insights, she says that the insights are much less likely to happen if you're having high levels of caffeine. So at those stages, if you want more insights, like probably reduce the caffeine levels, drink juices, tea maybe, because it's been shown that there is this link between, if you're really pushing high levels of caffeine, then just the ability for your brain to kind of relax a little bit more and look for some of those connections, it just kind of it's less likely to happen.
I know exactly the study you're talking about, and it's one of the most controversial ones out there, because a lot of people idolize the sort of scrappy, a bit hectic creative visionaries, these artists that you see portrayed in TV series in Hollywood. And a lot of them seem to be hopped up on caffeine and alcohol the whole time. But the research doesn't show that that's good for creativity at all. It's more a question of whether or not there's other personality traits which lead them to want caffeine more or alcohol more. It doesn't help everyone achieve those same things.
Yeah, I think people get confused. They think there's a linkage when sometimes isn't there really. They you know, it's like mental illness, for example, is often the one that gets talked about with folks that are very creative. Maybe it's a higher case of mental illness, but which is the one that's triggering the other sometimes as well. So I think it depends what you're in it for. If you're in it to create over a long period of time and to be prolific in that way, then probably steer clear some of those things. Certainly the people I work with who are operating at a very high level, whether it's in the arts or in business, working in Silicon Valley, that's not, then, you know, there's frankly too much to be done. They want to achieve too much creatively, and so they can tend to steer clear. They do, however, have ways of coping mechanisms in terms of stress, which is a different thing. And so you obviously see mindfulness being used a lot more as well. Even the Greeks knew this in symposiums, where they would have wine, but they always watered it down to 2 parts wine, 3 parts water, and they would serve it in shallow cups. So they weren't stupid. They realized that maybe a little bit of it is fine, but too much is could be detrimental. And where I was speaking last night was in Edinburgh, and in Edinburgh they had the clubs during the Enlightenment era, and they did exactly the same thing there with claret wine. They would water it down, because it is good, it's useful just to be, you know, a more relaxed state, especially if you're in a certain stage of the creative process. But you know, there's a danger to it as well.
I'd like to pick your brains a bit about the sort of people that you work with, because as you say, you work with authors, you work with musicians, you mentioned the Rolling Stones. A lot of people think, I could never be like those people. They're sort of godly and they've got a talent that I don't have. But from your experience, do these people that other people that your average person would consider to be ultra creative, do they also suffer from the sort of problems that normal people do, getting blocked, not thinking they can come up with ideas that are as good as the ones they previously had, or any other sort of creative issues?
Yeah, I mean, that list I mentioned earlier of all those kind of creative fears, they're pretty much there in all of them. They've maybe developed coping mechanisms and ways of dealing with it. I heard one the other day, Aaron Sorkin was talking about creative blocks in a course he did, a masterclass course, and he said creative blocks is his permanent position. So he always realized every day he goes in, there's a creative block there. And a lot of songwriters I work with who won a lot of awards on songwriting, they say, you know, inspiration is for amateurs, really. And you have to, you develop a craft around what you do, so you ensure that you're constantly working towards something. So even though those fears will come in, you essentially train yourself to be able to kind of deal with it and just kind of, you know, get on with it, because the fears are going to happen. I think Elizabeth Gilbert, she mentioned something before as a writer. She, whenever she starts on a book, she has this little voice at the side of her head that says, you're not really a writer, are you? You're not a very good writer. And really, you just had a one-hit wonder with that Eat, Pray, Love book. You know, this next book's not going to be successful. So she's actually learned to kind of just talk to the voice over and say, I realize you're here with my best interest at heart, but really, I think I'm good. I think I'm going to just carry on anyway. So you have to, you can play with that fear at the same time.
Absolutely. We're coming up to the end of the interview, unfortunately. I'm sure we could keep going for hours and hours. But what I like to ask a lot of the experts is, if you had one tip, or what I call one actionable insight, that people who are interested in becoming more creative could try out either over the course of an afternoon or a week, what would you recommend they try?
I think one I'm very keen on is creative pairs. I know there's a lot of research coming out about this as well. So, you know, every Batman needs a Robin. Picasso had George Brecht. John Lennon had Paul McCartney. I think sometimes when we think about creativity, we think it has to be a purely solitary pursuit. And actually, it can be very enjoyable working on creative projects with someone else, maybe someone that is a foil for you as well. If you're very good at certain stages of the creative process, a certain part of creativity, then maybe this person can come in and do the bit you're not so good at, because they love that part. So I think if there's one thing I would suggest to you, maybe if you're most of the projects you're doing are just you on your own, maybe have a project where you bring in someone else and you work together and you partner on something. It's just good because it'll bring in fresh ideas. It will challenge you with some of your, maybe it can get you out of a rut sometimes, because, you know, sometimes creativity could be a bit like a vinyl record. We get stuck in the same rut, and having someone come in and say, oh, actually, you know, if we did it this way, or we did it in a different way, that could be very useful. So go out there, whatever the project is, you know, maybe if you're a writer, maybe finding an editor or a co-writer to work with on something. I interviewed Honoré Korda recently, who's a very successful self-published writer, and she often will be co-writing with people. Songwriters use this all the time. Entrepreneurs, you know, the stats in terms of Silicon Valley of, you know, sole founder v two founders, like there's just no comparison. The more, two or more founders always ends up being more successful than a single founder. So I think creative pairs is the one little tip I would give you today.
Perfect. We're also going to get links down to your resources in the video description below. Can you just give us a brief insight as to what people can find if they go and click on that link?
Sure. So it's a thing I put together. It's a three-part training series called The Creativity Blueprint. And the first one, I actually talk in more depth about those five steps or stages of the creative process and what's involved in each of those. Then I think video two in that is about creative blocks. So I talk about a number of strategies you can deal with if you have blocks in whatever you're doing creativity. And then the third video is actually cover the 10 most common questions I get that come into myself and my team about creativity. So these are just like the real strong ones I hear all the time, like people trying to find time to do their creative work. Some of the things you mentioned, like confidence, how to build your confidence around creativity, daily rituals. So we cover that in that creativity blueprint, so people can get that for free.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful resource. I recommend everyone check it out. James, it's been wonderful having you here. I'm so glad you managed to make time to be part of the summit. And yeah, I look forward to speaking again with you soon.
My pleasure. Great being here.
Cheers. Congratulations on being part of the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm sure that if you continue to watch the other expert interviews, you will experience an improvement in your capability to turn your ideas into something valuable. But don't forget, to get the very best experience and ensure you don't miss any of the priceless lessons, you should invest in yourself with the All Access Pass. Not only will this give you exclusive lifetime access to watch all the lessons whenever is best for you, you will also get all the interviews as downloadable audio files so you can learn on the go, full transcripts so you can read and analyze the great advice and tips, and exclusive bonuses not available to anyone else. Click the link below to get your All Access Pass now.